Greetings, friends. I come from that little land down under that is proud, surprised, and very grateful to be the country of honour this year's Frankfurt Book Fair. As Bill Manhas said, that generally New Zealanders are aware of smallness, isolation. Our islands of the South Pacific, flanked on three sides by the continents of Australia, South America, and Antarctica. People of the Northern Hemisphere look at us on a map and they make jokes like, oh, so that is New Zealand. What happens when the tide comes in? Our heritage is mostly Maori and European. And the European import is at a distance, handed down through DNA and through the arts, music and books. For many of us, our knowledge of Europe has come from your great writers. When I was in my romantic 20s, I read and reread my favorite book, The Sorrows of Young Werther. And I promised myself I would learn German so that I could read it Goethe in his own language. I regret that I didn't do that. But I did read many German novelists in translation, and I confess I marveled at the elements of confidence, sophistication, and cleverness that separated these books from our own homespun literature. I wondered if literature was like wine or cheese. Did it achieve excellence of maturity because of its origin in ancient soil? Now, I speak of a time 50 years ago when New Zealand books were tentatively sprouting a new earth. A few here, a few there, small editions consumed at home. The rest of the world knew Catherine Mansfield, but as far as I was concerned, she didn't count because she blossomed in Europe. It wasn't until the late 1960s that our literary tradition became firmly rooted and was recognized internationally with writers like Janet Braid, Sylvia Ashton Warner, and Margaret Miley. Since then, it seems that there's been a literary explosion that in a few decades, New Zealand has become known as a country of writers, readers, publishers. How did this happen? I identify several factors. Alongside the growth in publishing, there are many excellent courses in creative writing, at tertiary and postgraduate levels. Writers are encouraged and supported with university fellowships, grants, and awards. One of the biggest literature awards in the world comes to New Zealand writers from the New Zealand government. It is the Prime Minister's Award. There's also private sponsorship and national competitions for all genre. All of this in a country of just 4 million people. But there is another factor that I consider very important, an influence that begins early in schools. In New Zealand, we have an education system that encourages creativity and individual development. About 12 years ago, I was on a working trip in the United States, and I had just finished a talk at Grand Rapids University. One of the lecturers in the education department said he'd been studying New Zealand and New Zealanders, and he wanted to visit our country to see what made us what we were. He said that in the top 10 names in the world in any field of endeavor, be it arts, science, exploration, or sport, one of those names would be that of a New Zealander. He added, "How can this be? You have such a small population." My instinct was to instantly dismiss his statement. However, when I did a little research of my own, I decided it was probably true. I invite you to try the same exercise. Take the top names in any field, medicine, opera, sports, films, physics. Is a New Zealander on that list? Probably. The plus side of smallness and isolation is a rugged do-it-yourself spirit, and our education system fosters that. I've never been a teacher, but like all New Zealanders, I am a product of teachers. So here, as a citizen of the country of honour, and a writer who has been shaped by many teachers, I would like to pay a tribute to New Zealand teachers who promote individual excellence and do not sacrifice creativity on the altar of conformity. I'm proud to be a New Zealander, and I'm grateful to be in this place at this time when my country is honoured. I'm going to finish with a story, because that's what writers are expected to do, tell stories. And this story is from my children's book, Snake and Lizard, which has recently been translated into German. It has nothing to do with the New Zealand landscape, but it has everything to do with relationships. Snake and Lizard are two unlikely friends, and in this story, they decide to confide in each other. It's called Secrets. The midday sun roasted the desert, and all creatures disappeared into whatever shade they could find. Snake and Lizard were under the shelter of a rock. Lizard's stomach was full of large blue flies, and he wanted to sleep. But Snake was in a talking mood. Tell me, dear Lizard, what was the worst thing you ever did? He ignored her. I mean, you know, the really worst, most horrible thing in your whole life. Lizard said. But Snake would not be put off. Come on. Lizard turned away. I forget. Then remember, said Snake. I don't want to remember. Now, Lizard, look at me. Aren't I the best friend you ever had? Can you trust me to the end of time? Okay, so get it off your chest. Lizard gave a long, shivering sigh. It happened a long time ago. I lost my little brother. That's it? Yeah, that's the worst. I never found him again, Lizard said. Snake was disappointed. You told me you had 97 brothers and sisters. No offense, but what's so terrible about losing one? He was the youngest, Lizard replied. A really sweet little guy. I was supposed to take him fly fishing down by the drain, but he was so slow I left him behind. When I came back, he was gone. Lizard's full belly shook with sobs. Take it easy. Snake rested her head near his. Maybe he just waddled off into the desert and got adopted by another lizard family. No, he couldn't have done that. Well, maybe he went home without you. I mean, did you count? He didn't go home. Are you sure? Sure, I'm sure. I told him to stay put, and my little brother was very obedient. I know what happened, said Snake. You came back to the wrong place. Lizard shook his head. I left him in the hollow of an old dead cactus shaped like a coyote's head. You did? I was only gone 2 minutes, sobbed Lizard. Snake moved away and said, there must be hundreds of old dead cactuses shaped like coyote's heads. No, only one. At that, Snake became quiet from her head to the tip of her tail. She was remembering a time when she'd been slithering through the desert looking for lunch. There in front of her had been a big old cactus with dead branches sticking up like a coyote's ears. In the split near the bottom was a fat little lizard. The silly thing didn't move, and Snake had been unable to stop herself. Lizard was right. The little guy had been real sweet. After a long, shuddering sigh, Lizard got his breath back and said to Snake, your turn. You know, your turn to say the very worst thing you ever did. Oh, that, said Sally. She thought for a moment. I hissed at my mother, she said.